Welcome to the Hello First Name Podcast. The Hello First Name Podcast revolves around the term personalization and is brought to you by marketing author Rasmus Holin, founder of Omnichannel Institute and chief experience officer at the marketing automation software company Agilic. The podcast is based on the book Hello First Name. Each episode is based in turn on a chapter from the book, followed by a discussion of the very same chapter with an expert marketing practitioner in the following episode. As always, you can buy the book on Amazon or other bookstores. You can also choose to listen to it all for free on your favorite podcast service. You're also very welcome to download the abstract of the book for free, and all models, of course, are able to download. All downloads are sponsored by Agilic. I'll make sure to put a link to everything in the show notes. But you can always connect on LinkedIn, and I'll be happy to reply and help out. Normally, I'd say that I'm never sick. But I guess that even authors and podcast hosts do get sick every once in a while. So instead of the intended discussion of chapter 14, this week's episode is a bonus episode of the Hello First Name podcast with no one else but Mike Anderson, founder and CTO at Telium, one of the world's most successful CDPs and the most valuable tech partner of Agilic.
Hello and welcome to this bonus episode of the Hello First Name podcast, where I have a very special guest with me in the studio. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
You're the CTO and founder of Telium, one of the most successful CDPs in the world. So first of all, kudos for that. Must have been quite a journey. And secondly, congratulations for having been named the leader in Gartner's Magic Quadrant.
Thank you. I'm super excited. It's been a long run. I've been doing Telium for a long time. I've been in data for a long time as well within real-time analytics, but it's very exciting to see the industry and companies in the market come around to our vision that we had years ago, and it's for me it's very exciting times.
So how's it been? I mean, you founded this. How was the founding situation way back then? How did you come upon the idea with the CDP? It must have been before the term was even coined, I suppose.
It absolutely was. There was, if you look back over at my history, there was a series of Slumdog Millionaire episodes that sort of defined where we are. I worked for a company in San Diego called Website Story. We did real-time analytics. We were the first real-time analytics company. We competed with another company called Omniture. And this was even before Google Analytics was Urchin Analytics. And when Google bought Urchin Analytics, the founder, Josh James of Omniture, got really scared and decided that Website Story and Omniture needed to merge together to take on this free analytics threat. The combination of Website Story and Omniture went on to become Adobe Analytics, and it's, yeah, you know, it's a big successful product today. But it was very clear to me back in, this was in 2007, 2008, it was very clear to me that the strategy was rip and replace. They were just going to rip out all of the implementations that had been done by our Website Story customers, which was very near and dear to me, and was going to replace it with Omniture. And I looked forward into the future and thought, Oracle's going to buy these. I wouldn't have guessed Adobe, but I would have said Oracle's going to buy these guys in 3 years, and I'm going to do this again. And so we thought, there has to be a more customer-centric way for tagging up their event-level data, their web-level data, their mobile-level data, and doing it in such a way that was more in the nomenclature of the business rather than the nomenclature of the vendor. And so we created tag management, which allowed our vendors to do a better job of syndicating their data out to multiple places, with the attempt to try to de-silo organizations, which is still the way it is. And along the way, you know, we knew that would put us into the data flow. We knew that tag management solved a big problem between marketing and technology, and it would put us into the data flow, because we knew that back then it really wasn't about the tags. Even when we were raising money back then, we said, we're doing tag management, that's our first product, but it's not about the tags, it's about the data, it's about the customer data. And if you can give us some money, we'll go build a customer data platform. And so we really executed on that vision. And in 2013, we launched the first industry customer data platform. And we've been working on it and ever since.
Great. Because that rings some bells to me, because I remember the first times that I was sort of introduced to Google Analytics, and I was looking at that. It was all statistics. It was all conversion rates, but you had no idea who the customers were or who the users were in this case. I mean, you could have some kind of semi-accurate number of how many visitors and visits you had. But apart from that, everything was centered around the website, not centered around the customer.
Everything has needed to pivot, and you're absolutely right. It was visit analytics back then, yeah, which didn't really tell you that much. And coincidentally, back to this Slumdog Millionaire stuff, Website Story bought a company along the way, Visual Sciences, which was the first customer analytics platform. And so that's where I really started to learn that visitor analytics is really where the best information is, and understanding how to communicate with your customers versus what percentage of my visits are converting or not. I can't do anything with that. Yeah. I can, other than report. But yeah, if I understand my customers and I can segment them into converting customers and non-converting customers, now I can take action. And which is why Tealium was never about building another analytics platform. It was always about building a data intelligence and activation platform.
And I think that leads us perfectly into discussing personalization, because suddenly it's not about the pages. It's more about the stages. It's about the customers. It's about what you do with those particular customers that you can identify and put a tag on. Because that's what I understand with tag management, right? That you can put a tag on a customer saying that this customer has a specific behavior, so they get this tag. Or how do you define it in your terms?
It's mostly that. I would say that you have the conditionality with tag management to control those things. Normally, you're running your analytics solutions all the time. You want to record everything. But when you get into personalization, when you get into maybe product recommendations, you may even make the decision to say, we're only going to show chatbots for maybe our VIP customers and not for our normal customers. If we don't know anything about you, I may not introduce any of these maybe more advanced tag-based capabilities. Most marketers that I see kind of define their customers as unknown or known. And I don't always agree with marketing, with the way that they see things. And you know, if you look at most of your retail sites, you'll see today you come for the first time to a resale site, and the very first thing is, boom, give me your email address. Yeah. And the idea is, I get it, that you want to move a customer from unknown to known. But the reality is, I give you my email address, you don't know anything about me. You know how to put me into a very generic email drip campaign, but you don't know anything about me. And so I believe there's this entire getting to know you phase in between, where you're looking at what am I searching for? What am I clicking on? What products am I spending time on? What articles am I looking at? All those different things, because it's when you start to understand those, personalization becomes something that has some wood behind the fire at that point.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So it's a bit like, I mean, let's hang out a bit and listen to me and let's talk for a while until you ask me for a kiss, basically, which is be like asking for the email address. So it seems super weird to just all up front, boom, give me your email address.
Yeah. However, most of these companies are being influenced by large companies like Google that have a serious third-party cookie crisis and a data quality crisis on their hand. And so from their perspective, because a lot of these companies are running GCP as their back end, this is the recommendation from Google: get the email address at all cost, try to figure out the identity. And that's just what they try to do. We both know this though. If I come to your website and you actually can close me, you're going to get my email address. So you don't necessarily, ask for a write-up, it's because you think you can't close me.
Wait a bit. I think that's the right thing to do here. wait around for a bit so you know a bit about me, and once you can see on the tags or whatever, on the data that you have on me, that I could be potentially ready to either make a purchase or whatever, then you can at least start to ask for my email address. Obviously, we're here to discuss personalization, Mike, as in the book, Hello First Name. Just from a CDP point of view and from a Tealium point of view, how important is personalization in the conversations that you're having at Tealium?
It's honestly the most important thing. There are two facets to personalization that I will say that are important to me. I believe in the moments that matter. I've actually stopped using words like session and visit, which are more analytic terms. I've started using the term conversation. A customer comes to a brand and starts a conversation. It's very common that the de facto strategy is pop up that box, get their email, push it off into your ESP and into your social solutions, and just focus on reacquisition. That's the solution that you worry about, rather than listening in the moment to what the customers are interested in and trying to engage in that conversation. And data is the way that you can do that. When I say that I divide it up into two scenarios of personalization, the one is obviously I have information on you as a visitor, and I'm going to try to put the next best experience, the next best offer, something that helps you move through where I want you to go faster. So it's easier to do that. The second piece is, which is, you know, may not necessarily be considered personalization, but I consider it that, which is these people may move around from you know, content areas to support areas. They may call into the call center. They may go into the store. They may do all these things. And the idea is, how do I make sure that when somebody jumps mediums from the website to the call center, how do I make sure that we're ready to provide a continuous, a logically contiguous journey for that customer, rather than if you'd like a new credit card, press one. Like, I'm calling to track my order. You know this. If you looked at my analytics, don't offer me things that you know that I'm not interested in. And so
the whole identity stitching part of it.
It really is. It's all about the customer profile, and then just making inferences as to what do I think this customer is interested in. You know, case in point, if I look at, you know, and there's a marriage of analytics all throughout this. If I look at if I'm a retailer, and I look at my analytics reports and I see that my exit pages are typically product pages, which is usually the case, maybe stock issues, whatever it might be. But I come back to a website. Why not give me the ability to say, do I want to go back to the last product that I looked at? You know, this is what Amazon does. And we all know that Amazon only loses when people are impatient. Otherwise, Amazon pretty much wins. And so if they're doing something that like this, it's going to make sense. But the idea is if I'm shopping for a pair of shoes or I'm shopping for a jacket or something like that, and I've gone through all of the search filtering to find this, and then I get distracted, I get called back to work and the tab gets closed, whatever it is, make it easier for me to get back to where I was. That's what we, so personalization is not always just changing colors and, you know, changing fonts and things like that and try to doing product recommendations. Sometimes it's just, let me try to help you continue the journey you started with me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The brands that are successful in having me or making me restart the conversation or restart my customer journey when I forget about it and I get, you know, the dog barks or the baby cries or whatever, the ones that can get me back into where I was, the easiest, they're probably going to win. You've had a chance to look at the bow tie of personalization, the wonderful bow with insights in one end and two types of content in the other one. How does that fit with how you see personalization at Tealium?
You know, I would like to, in this visualization, I'd like to have this cummerbund running underneath it, because I think there's another piece. I think the big thing that I completely agree with it. You know, one of the most important things that I find in personalization is the when. And a lot of people, the when do you ask the right question, right? And let me give you an example. And in prep for this, I don't know why. Sometimes I just dream this stuff. But last night I thought this is a good example for this. Let's imagine you're driving and you're driving through a desolate area. Maybe you're driving to Las Vegas or maybe you're driving to Arizona. Which one of these signs, and you need gas, okay? You don't have an electric car yet. You need gas. Which one of these signs is better for you? Gas next exit or gas previous exit? And so the idea is, how do I give these customers what they want when they want it? And exactly. And so when I think about the boat, I agree with you completely on the bow tie of personalization. There needs to be insight. There needs to be the messaging. But so many times marketers think, oh, we're sending out personalized messages through our ESP. Okay. But what were you doing in the moments that matter when the customer came to you and wanted to have a conversation? That's, I think, where there's so much room for innovation and improvement in the way that customer experiences are dealt with today.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So that's exactly the why we split the insights part of the bow tie into two, namely the segments that you were briefly talking about there as sort of the somewhat poor example versus the moments of truth, which are the moments that matter. When am I running out of gas? And should I taking a right turn here and fill it up or not? And yeah. I think discovering the intent is very much what this is about. But the two types of insights here. The segments could either be value based segments or more persona like demographic segments, and the moments of truth insights here. How does Tealium support these two? Do you support both? Can you both use Tealium to sort of identify which overall demographic segment I'm in, as well as when am I going to run out of gas?
We absolutely do. Now we play as a customer data platform. We work as part of the customer data architecture. So you know everybody's putting Snowflake and Databricks and maybe GCP up there right now as their what I would say is their customer data warehouse. This to me is very important because companies need to own their customer data and they need to realize that it's a huge asset for them. But the idea is you have this customer data warehouse that stores more of the lifetime perpetuity of who a visitor is. And if you want to do some sort of nurture engagement, maybe you're an insurance company or an automotive company, something where the purchase cycle is a longer period of time, customer data warehouse is a great place to have this information. A customer data platform, as I see it, is not necessarily a definitive 360-degree view of the customer. It's actually more of a hot cache of who the visitors are that we're actively engaged with for the last 30, 60, 90, maybe 180 days, depending on the nature of your business. And when I look at these two things together, I tell people, this is how you understand it. Think of a modern computer. You have a hard drive and you have RAM. Your hard drive is your CDW, your customer data warehouse. Your RAM is your customer data platform. And so based on that, we're constantly slicing and dicing data and trying to understand as people move into audiences and out of audiences, how do we syndicate that data, activate that data properly so that it gets to the right vendor in the tech stack to do the right things. And so, yes, to your point, absolutely. We are trying to figure this. We are trying to figure this out. There are some, you know, you have no people and you have yes people and you have maybe people and trying to figure out, I don't need to spend that much time going after the no's. I may don't even need to spend much time going after the yeses. It's the maybes where I really need to go after to turn them into more yeses. And I see a lot of companies that there's a very large streaming company out there, which is one of our customers. And they said, look, we know everything about what our visitors are watching, and we don't need a solution like you because we know all of the every show, every episode, everything that they watch. We know everything. I said, listen, I'll be honest with you. These fat and happy customers in the middle of the bell curve, I'm not interested in them at all. The people on the left-hand side of the bell curve that are not premium subscribers, how to get them to become premium subscribers? Those are people I'm interested in. And the people on the right that are starting to disengage with premium services so that we can get in ahead of them in advance. Those are the people that I'm interested in. And then they became a customer because they said, great, because we're not thinking about those two edges. And so anytime you think about a situation where a customer can move from one state to another, not a state, but a state of browser to purchaser or researcher to booker, whatever it is, anytime you can think about a customer moving states, Tealium should be one of the most valuable partners out there that you can find.
And how important is real time in this case?
For me, honestly, people probably get tired of hearing me say that real time is everything, but I think real time is everything. And when I say real time, I mean real time, not 15 minutes, 30 minutes, kind of real time. If you have a batch-based system, you're not real time. If your leading customer engagement use cases involve email, you're not thinking about it from a real-time perspective. This concept of digital transformation, if we go back to the 1950s, when you would walk down to the corner store and they knew your name and they knew what you liked, a cup of coffee and a paper, whatever, that is the old concierge type service that we used to have. Today, digital transformation is just being able to provide through personalization that concierge level service without having 100,000 agents online that are personalizing it. It's using data, it's using digital tools to provide that concierge level service. That is digital transformation. We've been talking about it for 6 years. How many companies have actually digitally transformed?
I think very few.
I'm still waiting.
Right? I love the concierge metaphor because that's a really helpful person that interested and is listening and is trying to figure out what your needs and your desires are and help you to get there faster while also providing a service that you're actually paying for.
Yes.
So I love that metaphor. So moving on to a broader topic, namely MarTech maturity. There was a study by my co-author Franz Riemersma by his company Marketing Tribe that uncovered actually at which stages of self-reported maturity that companies normally deploy a CDP. And actually, I think CDP came out on top or at some of the later maturity stages. So you would normally start with like a website and maybe a small time ESP, then CRM and marketing automation, maybe, and together with e-commerce. And then at the later maturity stage, it doesn't have to be in that order, but at a later maturity stage, they would deploy a CDP. But I'd like to actually hear your view on this. How mature do you think a company needs to be marketing stack-wise, or how big? Do you have an example, for instance, of a small client? How small can you be and still get value from working with a CDP?
You could be very small. I see very small customers that get tremendous value out of a CDP. You know, regardless if you're a small company or you're a big company, if you value your customers and you value the relationship that you're building up with your customers, then I think a CDP is definitely something you should look at. People will say, I don't necessarily know if I need real time, but they oftentimes don't understand that real time is not just always about let me send text messages or let me do pop-ups and things like that. It's about being ready that when one of your customers moves to different parts within your brand, and that may be the call center, in store, or just moves to different areas of the website, that it's not so much about always activating and putting a message in front of them. It's being ready. Even if it's just saying, I know who this person is. I know what they've been looking at over the last 5 minutes and they've called into the call center. So I can have a pretty informed conversation about what I'm guessing you're trying to do as a result of this. So I think that's a big piece of it. Picking on some of our competitors a little bit. We came out with Customer Data Platform a long time ago. 2013 was when we released it. I can go back and find articles and I can find stock, you know, stock quarterly stock reports where these companies came out and said customer data platforms are a flash in the pan. They're not going to last. It's the next, you know, it's the next buzzword. And there is the Salesforce and Adobe effect that everybody uses those tools. And so if Salesforce is out there saying customer data platforms are not going to be a thing, and Adobe's out there saying customer data platforms are not going to be a thing, there's a good chunk of the marketing community that's going to accept that. And it made our job a little bit tougher. But when we could show the value that you could actually do with a customer data platform, it changed things. But now you have, you know, now you have Mark Benioff who's out there tweeting and saying, hey, Salesforce is one of the top CDPs out there. You know, they are. I agree with that. They're a B2B CDP for me. Tealium focuses more on the B2C, the customer, customer data platform. But I think that was some of it. And, you know, honestly, the other challenge that you run into is just tool fatigue at some of these companies. I think marketing, it's very common for you to say, hey, marketing, we need you to do something new. And their first reaction is, okay, I need a new tool. So for us, the market education around customer data platform was, how do we fit? How do we add value? How do we help you dazzle your customers? And where do we sit in the
maybe customer? Maybe less about the size then, as I understand it. So it's less about the size of the company, more about how focused they are on customer centricity and really wanting to put the customer's interests at the center of things.
I think that's it. I think the more of them that have read some of the mission statements from Netflix or have listened to the Jeff Bezos say, you know, always have an empty chair at the table and assume that the customer is sitting there. We're seeing that, you know, all the big companies out there are doing a really good job at putting the customer at the center of the universe. And if companies start to believe that that's what they need to do, and I believe that that's what they do need to do, that's when they start to become very interested in what a customer data platform can do for them.
I'll give you an example actually from a joint client of ours. So it's a Norwegian client that we have together with you. So they have implemented both Agilic and Tealium. So Agilic as the marketing automation platform, obviously Tealium as the CDP. So they're a horse racing, horse race betting company called Rikstoto in Norway. So every penny that they earn is then going back into the horse racing sport. So it's a really fine enterprise. And they're actually bound by legislation to, balloons, where did those come from? So they've been bound by legislation to endorse, or how do you can say, enforce responsible gambling. So yes. As soon as you have gambled for a certain amount, then they are not allowed to send you any more adverts or any emails or anything. So they need to know instantly, talking about how important real time is. They need to know instantly whether you've placed a bet or not, because then they can immediately pull you out of advertising or put you out of email campaigns or whatever and make sure that just the bets that you placed are now the only ones there and you're not potentially wasting or losing any more money.
You know, that's not the only place that I see it. Down in Australia, there are a lot of gambling companies that are down there, and they have a really hard job. They'll say, like, we're like an e-commerce company that has 90,000 products that only lasts an hour, right? Because it's all these different wagering bets that you can make. They have something similar where there's a global gambler-aholic, I don't know if I'm saying it right, but a gamble-aholic database. And if you have called in, if you are in that database,
yeah,
you actually cannot place a bet. Forget about the additional advertising. You actually have to be precluded from making a bet. So I do think that we're going to see more of these types of things come up. It seems like, you know, maybe a finicky regulation for a certain category, but who knows with GDPR and CCPA and all these new restrictions that are coming out around data privacy. And the idea is, to your point, that's a form of real-time personalization, right? It's not, hey, let me show you a fancy jingle that may entice you to buy a new product. It's, I'm going to personalize the experience by removing things that you can't do because of legality. And that's personalization in itself. It's not fun. It's not sexy personalization, but it is personalization. And in that sense,
on a website, it could be the same on a website where I think actually you mentioned this in the beginning of our conversation, that you could choose to remove stuff that isn't necessarily. So the ask for the email, please give us your email address. And I've been there 1 second. I mean, obviously I would hide that and make that pop up later, but I think there are also other elements that you could potentially hide. So like all the scarcity nudges, like the two left and offer only valid for whatever. If I'm browsing, that's hugely annoying because I'm not really trying to make a purchase right now. I'm just browsing and I'm maybe trying to see if I can get inspired. So stuff like that, I've seen that actually can be removed as well. And that will then gain, the conversion rate will gain from that actually.
You're going to see, because we're actually pressing those use cases now. You're going to see some more of those use cases come in. You know, and most of these things just come from my own life. I recently was booking a flight. And I was on a plane booking a flight for another trip, and my connection wasn't, I was plain Wi-Fi, so it wasn't great, but I'm trying to book this flight just so I can relax and get back to, you know, either watching a movie or eating or sleeping, one of the three on a plane. I had to wait to complete my booking because these ads that wouldn't load. And finally they loaded after about 3 minutes, and it was, hey, you should go to Costa Rica. You should go to Hawaii. Like, I don't want to go to either of those places right now. I'm trying to finish my booking to Atlanta. Can you just let me do that? And so I think we're going to see more of the, you know, with the travel sites, with the travel mentality. Like, are you here to book? Are you here to research? If you're here to research, I'm going to get the booking engine out of your way. If you're here to book, I'm not going to show you vacation destinations because I assume you know why you're here and you know what you want to do.
Yeah. I've always wondered why so if you want to book a plane ticket and you are going to buy a first class ticket, that the customer experience is almost identical. Why don't I get a first class customer experience when I'm buying a plane ticket that is X times more expensive?
Listen, why can't I buy mixed? I have two kids and I'm married. Why can't I buy mixed class tickets, right? I have to do these as two transactions. I have to book like business class tickets for me and my wife. And my sons are too young to really appreciate riding in the front of the plane. I didn't get to ride in the front of the plane till my 40s. So they're not going to ride in the front of the plane in their teens. But I can't book those. I can't book those. And then it gets even worse. I can't even book their tickets in a separate transaction because they're both under 16. So it's like, hey, these are now unaccompanied minors. Like, let me just book two seats in the front and two seats in the back at the same time. I don't understand why this is so hard. So there is so much room for improvement. And if you just stop and look at your life, you could say this experience could be a whole lot better. And that's, for me, my life is just prospecting clientele for Telium by saying this experience could be better.
Let's turn it around a bit to flip it upside down. So who would you, which kind of company or which situation would you say a company could be in where they wouldn't need a CDP? So when would you say to people, this is not the time for you with a CDP, or you're not ready for it, or it's not suitable for your kind of business?
That's really interesting. I think that if you had a, maybe some kind of like, small product that you could advertise on Facebook and people would just see it, go through and buy it. You know, maybe it was some kind of a custom, you know, cooking apron or, you know, some kind of a weird light or something like that. I don't know.
It's a life product.
Yeah. Something if the process is, see the advertisement, go to the website. I'll tell you who doesn't need it. Amazon doesn't need a customer data platform, right? Because for them, it's you need something, you go to the website, you search, you buy it, and you're done. If the path is information about a product directly into searching for the product to purchasing the product, if you pretty much have a straight conversion funnel that happens every time, you probably don't need a customer data platform.
Very impulsive products, so that you buy on an impulse.
That is the short, intelligent answer that I was struggling to get to from my long-winded answer.
All right. So flipping it around once again, looking for the value, what is normally the biggest value add when a CDP is implemented correctly?
I think one of the biggest things that, we're seeing a new one start to emerge. I think one is people are starting to understand is as people come to my website, is this a customer or not a customer? Even that basic audiencing, people don't know who are my customers, who are my non-customers, who are my VIPs, who are my hot leads, my warm leads, my cold leads, who are my high value, my mid value, my low value customers. So it's beginning. I tell my team at Tealium that needles in haystacks are very hard to find, but with Tealium, it actually is easy because we break the haystacks down into smaller, more organized haystacks. And at that point, it's much easier to find needles in them. But now where we're getting to is I think the biggest value is one, I'm starting to understand my customers more. And we do things with them where we do persona exercises, where we try to say, like, these are the types of customers that you have. And we're learning new personas all the time as the data speaks to us. The second piece is I can now activate this data as a marketing person, with maybe a slight bit of tech skill set, because normally I would have to go beg, borrow, and steal from my own engineering department to get these things done. So I get some more autonomy on what I can do. I'm able to syndicate this data to more of my marketing stack, which before, this wasn't a thing. I would maybe move it into my ESP, but that was pretty much it. Now they're starting to actually get more value out of all the tools that are in their tech stack. But this last one that we're up against, everybody has some sort of AI, Gen AI, ML mandate that they need to do something. And now when you start to think about quality data coming into the system, now you're much better positioned to start really actually embarking on your AI journey.
Yeah, so there's a previous way of benefiting from a CDP, which is now getting maybe some extra fuel, because if everybody in a few years' time is dependent on Gen AI, and I mean, the stuff that you fuel that with is going to have an increased impact.
It does, and if you look at the, and we'll go back to personalization, we'll go back to the value of real time. If you look at everybody out there wants next best experience. It's the holy grail out there, right? This is my customer. This is what I want to put in front of him. But it's amazing that people aren't doing it yet. And it's because the quality of data is not there yet. Mm-hmm. And most of these companies have these customer journeys that their customers go on that are all long tail journeys, right? I come to the website. I don't really do what you want. You email me, you social me, you ad tech me, you bring me back. I don't convert. You do it again and again and again. And I just end up with these very cardinal journeys where they're just, I don't have much overlap. And as a result, there's not much ML signal that comes out of that because the patterns haven't emerged. By the time that I have enough data for those ML patterns to emerge, the journeys have likely changed. And so I'm not making any ground. And so if you do think about this and you focus on in the moment that matters, real-time personalization, trying to nurture the customer along in the journey to get them to where you want to go. If you can make that happen, the journeys naturally shorten and they naturally aggregate. And as a result, the ML value that comes out of that aggregated data, you achieve it much faster and you get exponential value out of it. And so for us, it's if you can really focus on closing business faster, then the customer journeys overlap and you're going to be able to do more predictive Gen AI capabilities in the future. That's why real time matters. That's why personalization is, if I could only pick one tool in my MarTech stack, it would always be a personalization tool.
Hmm. Actually, the opposite of the example we had before with the very sort of impulsive purchase product, I think we have another joint client, which actually is a perfect example of that. So we have Kvik Kitchens. So they're selling kitchens. So I think that's probably the opposite of an impulsive purchase. So I think the purchase cycle is around 13 years. Or I mean, you buy a new kitchen every 13th year or so. So when people are in the market, they need to be there. And they need to be able to stitch that journey together. So when suddenly you forget that you are not anymore buying this, or you forget that you were buying this kitchen, but something else happens in your life, really getting people back on track into that decision-making, into discussing this with your spouse or with your wife or with your whomever, and making sure that long, long decision journey gets shortened. If you do that for all your customers, all your potential customers, shortening everybody's decision cycle, obviously that means more business.
And the idea is, and imagine if you have two kitchen companies out there and one of them takes 3 months to close business, and the other one, through efficiency, through personalization, through saying the right thing at the right time, they get it done in a month. They are going to win.
They're going to, they have amazing results on their CPL, for instance. I think it's like improved by 86% or something like that. It's quite amazing. All right. Your best advice for companies wanting to evaluate a CDP, what should they be looking for?
The first part about it is this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. You have to be committed to putting quality experiences in front of your customers, and you really have to believe that. But when I've been asked this quite for years, when we did tag management and we did customer data platform, people would always come up to me and say, if I'm doing all my audiencing inside of Tealium, I don't necessarily need to use the audiencing capabilities inside of my email system. So I may be paying too much for my email system, and I would likely agree. But they would ask me and they would say, which one should I choose? And when we're thinking about CDPs, my response is, this is something where you want a partner. Mm. And this is something where you're going to have to roll up your sleeves, and you want your partner to roll up their sleeves alongside you. So if you feel that when you're talking to when you're evaluating a CDP vendor, if you feel that they're in it, and you feel that they are focused on your success because your success is their success, those are the right partners to choose. Those are the right partners to choose in the long run. And again, as one of the founders of Tealium, it's been my mission from day one to always say, we want to be your favorite vendor. We want to be your most successful vendor. We want to be your best vendor, because this stuff is hard to do. And you can hear me. I'm an opinionated guy, right? I don't just sit back and take orders and say, you know, okay, tell me what you want to do and I'll write you up an SOW. I will sit and engage with you and talk about how we can make your business better. I think these days, it's about the software having its core capabilities, but it's also your partners having the experience and the consultative confidence to be able to say, this is what we think you should, this is what you could do. You understand your business better than anybody else to say what you should do.
Yeah, great. So I'm coming back to sort of this thing about it not, oh, the thing not only being software. So if you're going to evaluate a CDP, you might ask yourself, okay, so, I mean, did we train for the marathon? Are we in it for the long run? Do we have the right people? Did we have the right breakfast? Did we train properly? The people and skills thing, and not only the software thing. I think that would be part of the dedication that you need to run a marathon in this case.
And one more little anecdote that I have in there. If you're running the sprint, and you have a pebble in your shoe, if you're going to stop and take off the shoe and take the pebble out, the race is over, right? You don't have time to do that. You just have to grin and bear it, and you just have to run with the pebble in your shoe. But in a marathon, it does make sense to stop, take the pebble out of your shoe, do things right, put the right foundation in place, don't cut corners, because this is a long time going forward that you're going to be able to leverage these abilities.
Great. Best advice for companies wanting to implement a CDP, what should they have in place before doing so?
you know, we're still trying to cross that chasm between siloed business units and de-siloed business units. And hopefully customer data, hopefully the customer and the customer data helps bridge that gap. I think that the best thing for companies to do, it 5 years ago, marketer was the main buyer of customer data platforms. Now we have marketing leaders, we have data leaders, we have IT leaders that are all at the table. The best thing that you can do is get aligned internally. And if you can't get aligned, ask us to help you, give you advice on how you should align better. But alignment starts intra-customer, intra-company, and then it expands into inter-relationships. But that's the best thing. You can't, there's so much privacy restriction and there's so much future of AI that you need to de-silo your business. You need to embrace your partners. You need to figure out what our business strategy is. I tell my team that for years, we've been an amazing partner to the marketing team, right? Letting them do what they need to do. But we really need to be a great partner to the business. And that means data leaders, IT leaders, and marketing leaders. We need to be a great partner to all of that. And it changes the way that we talk about things. And it changes the discovery. It changes the meetings that we have. It's changed everything at Tealium for how we go to the market. But we need to be great partners to the business.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. So having the internal alignment in place, not necessarily a super easy thing to do, but definitely something that helps when you are in to run a CDP marathon or a customer centricity personalization marathon. So final question to end off with, Mike. This has been extremely interesting. But I'd like to hear, and I always ask people this, what is your own favorite example of a personalized customer experience that you've tried on by yourself?
Can I have two?
Yeah, you can definitely have two. Yeah.
The first one was our very first customer data platform use case, which was used by Ancestry.com. And Ancestry for years had been plagued by, you know, the DMP markets. This idea that I drink Coke and I shop at Home Depot, so I'm interested in genealogy, right? That's not a thing. Genealogy is a very personal it's a very personal want. But what they had was they had a situation and they were using the big box vendors at that time, the best, you know, the best and the brightest in the industry, but they couldn't get their re-engagement emails out before 72 hours. And so with Tealium, we took that down to milliseconds. But what we ended up seeing was we saw a re-engagement of 4.5% on email reacquisition. We saw that go up to 62.5% just by sending a more relevant email out faster, because people see the commercials on TV, they start to sign up, and then they go back to the TV show and you've lost them and you need to reacquire them. That holds a special place in my heart because it was the very first customer data platform use case, I think, in the industry, or at least for Tealium. But this other one was pretty ingenious, in my opinion. It was a retailer. It was a closed retailer. And what they had was people that were just ordering multiple sizes of the same clothes to figure out the fit. And they were coming back saying, man, this hassle-free return is costing us a lot of money because people are buying mediums, larges, extra large, and double extra large. So they tried to create this system where they said, look, we're going to offer bucks, dollars, you know, purchase dollars to people that come into our store, pick up, it's a pickup in store, but we're going to have people try on the sizes and walk out with the right size. Now, this was a while ago. We were using beacons. We were using their mobile app. So when you walked into the store, we could identify who you were. And we sent that information off to a sales associate in the store. And you would think just by the run up of the story that their job was to go get your order so they could hand you your order faster. That wasn't what they did. They wanted to get the list of products that you had abandoned. And so when you went in to try on that first garment, they started laying out the products that you had abandoned right there in front of, right there on the counter. And as a result, when you walk out, you would say, I looked at this. This looks pretty nice. I'll take this. They had a 30% increase in purchases. And it was, you know, it was a little cheeky from my opinion, but I love the innovation behind
real life abandoned basket.
If you have an abandoned cart, yeah. While I have your attention trying on what you did buy, let me lay out in front of you what you didn't buy.
Historically, yeah. I think that's a beautiful example. Actually, we have a client that they're selling furniture, mostly couches and sofas. And they're actually doing somewhat the opposite because it's an omnichannel retail and you rarely buy a couch without going to the physical store. When you go there, you have the sort of the tactile feeling for which fabric you like and which model and so on. So the sales associate starts configuring on an iPad the sofa that you'd, or the couch that you'd most likely want. And then because it's a long decision cycle, you're not ready to buy it right then because you've sort of planned to look at other ugly couches for the rest of the weekend or whatever.
Right.
So what they do is that they actually save that basket for you. Say, okay, let me save your exact configuration that I have with you right now. Let's save that on your profile and we'll send you a link to it. I think it's like half of their total revenue comes from this basket that is captured in store. So a bit the same idea there, but flipped upside down with the store being where you collect it and vice versa.
I believe it. I, you know, with particularly with furniture, you see people do research online and then they go into the store because they need to feel it. They do the same thing. The TV friction has come down a little bit more, but people will buy TV sight unseen that I've seen. But you want to go in, you want to sit on it, you want to feel it because you have to, right? You're going to be sitting on it. Same with a bed, anything like that. But so many times we've seen, I researched online, and if they knew that I was researching, that would be some interesting information that if they were to ask like a zero party data question about research, that would be an interesting answer. But then I go into the store and I feel the couch, and let's say that I love it. I buy the couch, I sit on the couch, and when I open up my laptop on my couch, what's the very first thing that I see? An advertisement for the couch that I'm sitting on, right? And people are just paying money to reacquire you when it's never going to happen.
Yeah, that can give me a subject matter related depression experiences like that.
Yeah, it's...
So on that sad note, I think we have some really good examples there. Thank you for that, Mike. Thank you very much for joining the Hello First Name podcast. It's been a huge pleasure hosting you.
Thank you so much. This was one of the most fun hours I've had in a long time. And I will say this, I've read through the synopsis on the book. I believe firmly on it. Let's not make this our last conversation.
That's I'll take you up on that. Thank you very much, Mike.
Yep.
Thank you for listening in on this episode of Hello First Name. Remember that all models and even a written abstract of the book are available for download. You'll find the link in the show notes.
In our next episode, launched in a few weeks' time, we'll be finally discussing chapter 14, tying it all up in the bow tie of personalization, with Håvard Hofdahl, VP of Loyalty at the Nordic hotel chain Strawberry, formerly known as Nordic Choice Hotels.